Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Amo, can you hear me?
It's important that we start with some banter first and ask Amo if he can hear us. And then we can start the whole thing.
Great.
Welcome back to Nashville in the 2003 National Hockey League Entry Draft here on TSN and ESPN2. The first 14 picks of this draft have been made. Now we get an interesting situation here with the draft. You got a guy like Zach Parise. We saw him at the World Junior Hockey Championship, the son of J.P. Parise, who had a great National Hockey League career. If he's over 6 feet tall, he's gone by now. Pierre, you want someone to go up there and take a chance on this guy.
Absolutely. This has become nonsensical, this knock on small players. This is a guy with so much upside offensively. Size isn't going to be a factor. He's the hardest worker on his team at the University of North Dakota. He's been well-trained. Annie Murray was his coach at Shattuck St. Mary's in Minnesota before he went to the University of North Dakota. He is a pure winner. It would behoove any team that wants offense, character, and skill to take Zach Parise right now.
So now the pick.
New York Islanders are pleased to select from Leksand, Sweden, Robert Nielsen.
Oh. Well, you talk about bloodlines. There is the son of the Magic Man. Kent Nielsen's son. And Robert Nielsen has now been selected by the New York Islanders.
I don't like this pick. I don't like it at all. I can't believe the New York Islanders would go over to Europe and take a player who's got fine skill and he's a good player, and we saw him at the World Junior and he's got tremendous upside. But the fact that Zach Parise is still out there is unbelievable and almost unconscionable that they wouldn't take him.
I love it. Pierre's all wound up at the NHL entry draft.
I like the player. I think he's got talent. But the New York Islanders, Anders Kahler right there, their Swedish scout, is along with the player. There's Mike Milbury talking to Daryl Sutter. But, Gord, I have to tell you, the fact that Parise's out there and they didn't take him is a little bit
troublesome. Well, they may have to answer that question because, of course, Parise played for the Islanders, too. Yeah. So we have a trade to announce, and here's Gary Bettman.
Go ahead.
I have three trades to announce, one involving the next pick.
Yes.
Edmonton trades number 17 overall in this year's draft to New Jersey in exchange for New Jersey's picks number 22 and 68 in this year's draft. So the next selection in this draft goes to the Stanley Cup champion New Jersey Devils.
Here's a fascinating story about this New Jersey draft pick. The reason the Stanley Cup champions were able to pick 22nd in the draft was that the St. Louis Blues were found to have tampered with Scott Stevens in the early 1990s. It didn't come to light until the ownership change in St. Louis. And so the Devils had the right to get a first-round pick from St. Louis, which they did 2 years ago, and then the right to switch picks with St. Louis, which they're doing this year. And so the Devils, who draft better than anyone, are now moving up. And they're in the number 17 spot.
If Zach Parise goes here, shame on some of the other people. And this guy's the best at it.
David Conte is a guy revered in hockey circles as perhaps the best draft day guy in the league.
There's a reason why the Devils are champions year after year after year. They draft character, they draft skill, they draft intelligence, they draft heart, and they draft leaders. And I'm telling you, if it's Parise, shame on some people.
New Jersey Devils are proud to select from the University of North Dakota, Zach Parise.
Well, there it is.
Now, Pierre's happy now, and so are the New Jersey Devils because they got a heck of a prospect.
Well, there's J.P. Parise, who, as we mentioned, had a terrific career in the National Hockey League. And Zach Parise had that uncomfortable weight the prospects go through. When you get picked by the defending Stanley Cup champions who traded up just to get you, that's a pretty big honor. The Canadian coaching staff talked about him at the World Junior Championship that every time he was on the ice, the United States had a scoring chance. It really was something.
Look at the Cheshire grins on those guys. They're laughing. They can't believe this player was still available. It's humorous.
Call it 31 thoughts about Zach Parise. What you just heard was the 2003 NHL draft. Selecting at number 15, the New York Islanders chose to take forward Robert Nielsen of Sweden, the son of former NHLer Kent Nielsen, while Zach Parise, forward out of North Dakota and the son of Islanders legend J.P. Parise, was still on the board. Two picks later, the New Jersey Devils made a trade to take Parise, who would go on to score 800 plus points in the National Hockey League. Zach Parise finally has signed a contract to play for the New York Islanders. Michael Leboff, what does this mean for the team looking to get over the hump and past the Tampa Bay Lightning and into the Stanley Cup final?
Well, first you got to say just a long time coming, like 18 years. And on this side of the curtain, like as an Islander fan who's watched Parise play, what, however many games he played with the Devils, I don't really remember him ever being mad at him, like when he was on the Devils. And I think that's partly because of the team he played for. Like the Devils are, you know, an ally. They're, you know, enemy of your enemy is your friend kind of thing. And obviously played a big part in that series where Adam Henrique eliminated the Rangers in the Eastern Conference Final. So I can't honestly remember a moment of him, scoring a big goal against the Islanders. I mean, I can remember Alan Rourke scoring an own goal against the Islanders when they played the Devils in a game that Parise played, but I can't remember anything that Zach Parise did. And I think that's because, like, I always liked him as a player. Like, I always thought he was, just fun. A guy who not only was fun to watch, but, and yes, played well against the Rangers or whatever. But there was no fuss really, I guess, about him. And that's probably why he'll fit in perfectly with this team. He was very much just a hockey player who was good at hockey. And I remember 2010 Olympics, people making a big deal about him being one of the best players on Team USA. But other than that, like because he played for the Devils in the Wild, nothing except out of those probably franchises' echo chambers, I don't think there's much. He never really transcended that. And that's, once again, like perfect fit for this team. We love these players who are very good at specific roles, who don't have much baggage outside of their job. And he's definitely going to fit that. And I think it really would. I don't think Zach Parise, like if Zach Parise signed for the Dallas Stars or the Florida Panthers, I don't think it would be a move that would advance those teams much further. But for the Islanders, I think it actually does, because like I was saying, he's very good at a pretty specific role, which is he's still a pretty good power play player. And he's a good offensive mind. And the Islanders, as much as they focus on defense, you know, there are times that they will let power play slip by at big points, and they just need a guy like that, and they've needed one probably for a couple seasons, and he will fit that role. And so I think actually it does move the needle. This isn't the Islanders signing, you know, superstar, but this is another move that definitely inches the ball towards the goal line rather than it moving it back or just keeping it status quo. I think, you know, we don't know anything about the deal. We just know that Zach Parise he might be an intern. He might be a social media intern for the Islanders or something. We just know he is working for the Islanders. But you know, barring something unforeseen, I just think it's good business.
I always say root for people, not teams. And I always, I don't know if I would say I rooted for Zach Parise, but I don't ever remember rooting against Zach Parise. You know what I'm saying? Like, obviously, we watch a lot of Devils games, and when they were winning Stanley Cups, the Islanders couldn't even make the playoffs. So they were always kind of like, you always end up seeing them a lot in the, you know, the springtime. And, you know, I think Parise is just one of those guys that he's just, you know, he was never a guy, like you said, you hated or came to dislike for whatever reason. He always played a, you know, fairly clean game. I don't remember any kind of like, you know, dirty hits he ever threw on somebody. It's funny because not that they're like comparable players, but like they kind of, you know, obviously cross paths a lot, or contemporaries, I would say. But like, I remember the time Shane Doan scored a hat trick against the Islanders in a game in Arizona more than I remember any single goal Zach Parise ever scored against the Islanders at any time, you know? And he's just that kind of like, you know, solid fundamental player that came out of the draft, you know, NCAA system, and just kind of fit within the Devils immediately. And, you know, they just plugged him into a hole and still remained pretty good for a long time. And in fact, he helped captain them to the cup final in 2012, along with Andy Green, who, you know, has become an Islander mainstay already in the first couple of years. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's important. You know, here, we're joking around. Obviously, we're parodying 31 Thoughts, the podcast. And, you know, we're here talking about, you know, correcting a mistake that's sort of 18 years in the making, or, you know, waiting 18 years to correct a mistake. But I mean, let's not, you know, make Zach Parise to be more than he is. He's 37 years old, was healthy scratch last year. He's far beyond his days as a 30 goal scorer. He's not going to make the All-Star team probably this year, but he is signing with the Islanders for a chance to win the Stanley Cup. And I mean, he said all the right things. This is a team that he feels like he can help. He can fit right in. He's excited to play in their system. And, oh yeah, by the way, his dad played for the Islanders in the early 70s and was one of their first real fan favorites, and really scored the first really enormous goal in team history. Was that goal 11 seconds into the overtime of the third game of the playoffs against the Rangers that sent the Islanders to the second round for the first time. And, like, you know, we all, Ed Westfall scored the first goal in franchise history. And, you know, obviously Dennis Potvin won the Calder Trophy in year two. But I mean, that goal, really, when you look at like Islanders history, that's like really the first big sort of single goal that stands out. And for a guy who only played for the Islanders for three and a half years, I mean, JP's legacy has continued on for a long, long time. And, you know, Zach has felt a connection to the team. And the Islanders this year, and it's really funny when you think about it, I mean, I asked you this question the other day, like, between Zach Parise now and Kyle Palmieri, like, that's two guys with connections to Long Island that the Islanders signed in the same offseason. I don't think they've signed anybody with any connection to the Long Island in years. Like, that this almost never happened. I mean, I guess you throw Matt Martin in there a little bit, but, like, really, this is kind of weird. Like, this Palmieri must be the first Islander, Long Islander, to sign with the Islanders, re-sign with the Islanders, since, like, Chris Ferraro back in the, you know, the mid-90s, a team that everybody in this world has forgotten. So
it's funny. Yeah, like, that thought never crossed my mind with either of them. And but you think about those off seasons when, like, Mike Komisarek was a big free agent, Chris Higgins was a big free agent, even like Eric Nystrom. it makes a lot of sense for the Islanders. Like,
I had a friend of mine
never did.
A friend of mine went to Michigan while Eric Nystrom was there. And he and I would always talk. And I was like, you know, that's Bobby Nystrom's son. He's like, yeah, I know. And he's always the guy. I completely forgot about him until you just mentioned. Always a guy that I always want to sign. Again, not a superstar player, but, like, why wouldn't you sign Eric Nystrom? That'd be perfect. And now he's retired. Like, you missed that opportunity.
It's probably because Bob was like, you don't want to – look, Eric – love the Islanders, but probably not the right time to go. Maybe just sign with the Stars.
Or Nashville or whatever it was. But
It's true. And it's, you know, it's going back to our 31 thoughts mode. Jeff Marek loves to go, do the Boston Bruins make sense for him whenever there's a Massachusetts player that is ever mentioned on the podcast? And with the Islanders, this is, because Komisarek and Higgins obviously are long gone, and their big free agent tickets were probably 2008 or 7 or 8 or whatever.
Yeah, something like that.
And the Islanders were, like, barely mentioned. Then maybe in like a Newsday article by, you know, Greg Logan or Arthur Staple, whoever was beat writing for them at the time. Hey, like, here's like five free agents the Islanders could, you know, maybe go after. And they would, a blurb at the very end be like, you know, they're, let's be honest, they're not going to sign Chris Higgins or Mike Komisarek, but they are from Long Island. So you never know. But, you know, don't be surprised when it's, Cale Mullerat, who's the big signing for them this offseason. And Keith Kincaid and Adam Fox. And
I was just going to say, Charlie Keith Kincaid. Yeah. Rob Scuderi was always Scuderi, one that you think, was he from, like, Northport or Syosset?
Yeah.
So, yeah. All of these guys, Kincaid was a weird one. Again, like, you know, all right, he's going to be playing Bridgeport probably, but, like, why wouldn't you sign him? Like, he's just there. He could play in the NHL a little bit if somebody gets hurt, but nope, it's Corey Schneider. Like, okay, well, that's fine, I guess, but why not this other guy? But this one off season, we've put that to bed. And it's weird because, like, you know, I mean, the guys in charge now don't really have that kind of connection to these two guys. I mean, you know, Lou Lamoriello has no connection to, he's got a connection to Zach, obviously. I'm sure he got to know JP during Zach's time with the Devils. But, you know, I don't know if the Islanders' connection there had anything to do with Zach signing. But, you know, he was bought out this year by the Wild after a fairly ineffective season and now comes to the Islanders, not as, you know, a guy I think they're going to lean on all that much, but certainly the veteran presence that we all talk about. And, you know, it can't be discounted too. This guy thinks his team is going to win a Stanley Cup. Like, that's pretty important. I mean, he could have signed. Yeah, fine. He could have signed here, even if the Islanders weren't going to do that. But I don't think he would have. I think he probably would have found somebody else to sign with that would have made a lot more sense to bring him a Stanley Cup. And it's pretty cool that he's here. And I mean, I don't know. I'm trying not to get too excited about it, but it does put a smile on my face when I think about it. And I was telling my wife when I was like, you don't probably remember this, but in 2014, I said that if the Islanders won the Stanley Cup and Johnny Boychuk signed a long-term contract, I was going to buy a Johnny Boychuk jersey. Well, Boychuk signed the contract, but the Islanders obviously haven't won a cup yet, and now Boychuk is all but retired. I was like, I'm going to amend that to say, if the Islanders win the Stanley Cup with Zach Parise on the roster, I think I'm going to have to get a Zach Parise jersey because it just feels too much synergy there to kind of, you know, to pass up. I feel like this would be an opportunity that I would want to take advantage of and just do that and, you know, make it a thing.
And I don't think you're alone. I think that, like, as I was saying, like, I think Zach Parise signing for, you know, the Carolina Hurricanes or Pittsburgh Penguins, like, I don't think those fan bases would really be excited. You know, they'd kind of find, you know, some humor in it. You know, this would be a name drop for Penguins anxiety episode in two years from now. Like, remember when Zach Parise was playing on Crosby's wing? Right.
When Jerome McGinley was a Penguin?
Yes, exactly. Like, that's kind of like how they would view it. And I think for us, it's, you know, pretty, you know, different. It is the kind of, I don't know, existential hype definitely outweighs what to expect, like the hype that we should expect on the ice, which isn't to say, like, it wouldn't surprise me if Parise does score, you know, 15 goals, and that would be a, you know, pretty big positive, you know, assuming he signs, you know, a pretty reasonable deal, which it sounds like he is. But I mean, yeah, down year last year, but his shooting percentage was like under 8%, and if you look back at his whole year, his whole career, he's usually around, you know, he's almost always above 10%. He's usually in like the 12% range, and he scored, you know, the season before last, he scored 25 goals, and the year before that he scored 28. And he was on his way to scoring 20 in the year before that, but he was shortened, I guess. He was I don't know exactly what happened, but he only played 42 games and scored 15.
He was hurt. I think he had some kind of bad injury.
Going back to his first season with Minnesota, which was a shortened year, so 48 games, 18. The next year, 29 and 67, 33 and 74, 25 and 70, 19 and 69, 15 and 42, 28 and 74, 25 and 69, and then last year, 7 in 45, which, I mean, he still had 18 points and obviously wasn't really fitting in well with the staff last year. So there is something to be said that, and this is another kind of move that won't ignite hockey Twitter. There won't be a big discourse on the Zach Parise contract, but if he does score, you know, 15 goals, I think a lot of people in March will be like, you know, that we should have saw this coming, because you look back at his you know, career numbers, and yeah, you can expect a dip when a guy reaches this part of his career, but he's not the type of player, he's not Casey Cizikas kind of player where he's digging into the corner and you're like, you know, this guy's gonna wear down at some point and there's gonna be a pretty steep cliff. I don't know if that's gonna happen with this kind of player. It might, but you know, the way you're talking about him, and you know, a lot of people listening who probably are in the same boat with you, like, there's just something beautiful about this guy playing on the finding the Islanders at this junction of their of like this era, like where they are an actual Stanley Cup contender before season start. that I think, like, even if he, like we said this on the last episode, even if he doesn't light the world on fire, I don't think anyone is going to be mad. There's just extremely and this is, I think, very unique to Islander fans, is a very weird appreciation that he's here. And that's really all we wanted. Like, we just wanted him to at least give, you know, give wear the jersey once. And he is, and he's doing it, and he's not doing it on a bad team. He's going to do it on a good team. And I really think it's going to be a really fun, however long he lasts with us, like, it's going to be fun. And I think both, and this is going to go both ways, like, between him appreciating the moment and us appreciating him appreciating the moment. Like, there's, it's going to be a really, I think, good relationship. And I'm really excited. Like, I don't remember when the Leafs signed Joe Thornton, and everybody for days and weeks, they were discussing about whether he's going to be a PP1 guy. He's going to play with Matthews and Marner. Are they going to live with him? Oh my God. All
is
or
he
nothing.
Get
with
the cup second from Tavares, yeah, or maybe third behind Matthews, or will he and Wayne Simmons hold the cup together?
Do you think this means they're going to get Marlowe back at the deadline? Right. Like, yeah. Oh, this is like, they should do a web series from his house. Like, oh my God, I can't wait to see what he says when Matthew scores 5 goals in a game. With Parisi, it's like, he's just here. And the only ones who are really noticing and excited about it are us. And I mean, you think about, there was a 31 Thoughts that came out, two whole episodes about the Jesperi Kotkaniemi offer sheet saga. Two whole episodes. And at the end of the second one, which is after the Islanders had announced that, Palmieri, Cizikas, et cetera, had signed, and also that Parisi was pretty much there, no mention. And that's fine. Like, that's the type of move this will be, and it's, like, all gravy.
Mm. Yeah. And it's funny because, like, they put it out on, like, it was a Friday, and the way the Islanders announced it was without an announcement. They were just like, hey, we're having a Zach Parisi media thing at 4. So, you know, whatever. And it was like, wait, what? It's like there was no announcement, no, like, you know, just release saying Islanders have agreed to terms with Zach Parise. Like, it was, I think that thing went out either at the time the press thing started or right after. And it was a very weird kind of way to announce this. You know, his media thing was a Zoom call about 10 minutes long. It was very nice. He seemed to be in very good spirits. He talked about how, you know, his mom was excited that he was coming to the Islanders. He's looking forward to playing in the system, but it was just such a understated announcement. And then, you know, again, we can talk about the parameters of the deal, the length and the money, but, oh wait, no, we can't, because we still don't know. If you go to Cap Friendly, it just says his name, his age, his position, and just UFA. That's it. This is 3 days now. We're recording this on Sunday. This happened, you know, Friday afternoon. Nobody has come out with the details of this contract in 3 days. Like, 3 days, nobody's said anything, which is remarkable. Like, how is that even possible in this day and age? Oh, right, because Lou Lamoriello is the guy in charge. And, like, nobody's going to say it. Zach's not going to say it. Lou's not going to say it. But, like, you know, maybe there'll be a 31 Thoughts podcast. Friedman will say it. Maybe he'll figure it out. Maybe LeBron. Maybe Arthur Staple will have it. Who knows? Like, it could be anybody, but it hasn't been. And it's
it might be Michael Russo.
Maybe Michael Russo, who, you know,
the new Zach Parise beat writer.
Yeah, he's probably was on the plane right behind Zach as he was flying to the island to do that. I don't know, but it's just a remarkable thing that, yeah, only we really care and nobody else seems to. And I'm with you. Like, to me, that's fine. My feeling on his actual position with the team is that, you know, they're bringing him in for some offense, for some power play time, for sure, because they need all the help they can get. I am a little worried that we might be putting too many eggs in his power play basket, but, you know, we'll have to see what happens. But, you know, I was thinking about this yesterday as, you know, we were talking about doing the show today. My feeling is Zach Parise going to provide more offense than Leo Komarov? Probably. Is he going to provide more offense than Michael Dal-Col? Definitely. Is he going to provide more offense than the ghost of Andrew Ladd has over the last couple of years? Yes. 100%. Hell yeah. So, like you said, I mean, it's, provided he didn't sign for some kind of stupid amount, but even still, like, A, they don't have the cap space, and B, he probably didn't. I think it will be fine. And, like, whatever he gives them will be good. And even if, you know, hopefully it's not another 18-point season, but, you know, there was a comment on the Athletic article about this. There was, you know, kind of a staff article. Arthur was in there, you know, and somebody was like, he just didn't, like you said before, like, he just didn't mesh with the new the coaching staff in Minnesota. Obviously, the Wild were going through a transitional phase. The Kirill Kaprizov era in Minnesota started with a bang. Like, this is this dude's team now. It's his team, period. And that's no slight to anybody that was there before, but it's his team now. And so they're going to build around him. And I wonder, Zach Parise's human. Like, I wonder if it's just kind of like just a weird year. Like, what am I doing here? What is my role? I've been here so long. We haven't won. People kind of wondering. And maybe Ryan Suter went through the same thing. So, I think there's an appreciation there. I think, he will definitely provide more offense to that probably third line spot. I feel like they're going to put him with JG Pageau, the human reset button, as we've called him before. I think they'll probably be pretty good. And, I don't think you got to teach Zach Parise a whole lot that he doesn't already know about playing in the corners, finding soft spots on the ice, getting open, making himself available for pucks and being able to shoot on net. So I have a feeling it's going to be a pretty good marriage. So far. So we'll see.
It's not the type of signing where you can imagine it going disastrously wrong. Like that's the great thing. The floor is so high because like we said, we don't expect it to be anything cumbersome on the cap. And like the worst thing that can happen is he doesn't produce and all of a sudden, he's a rotation forward with high offensive upside. And I think the point about the power play more than anything is that what he does is he gives them just more PP depth, like than anything. Like you think about the Islanders two units last year. It was, if Josh Bailey or Beauvillier were hurt or something, like you're thinking about, okay, Matt Martin standing in front of the net on one of the power plays. And this is obviously Zach Parise's obviously gives them another able-bodied forward. But even like we keep saying, like, even if he doesn't light it up, what he's done by just setting of the 2003 draft and having to go through that and just thinking about, I don't really remember Zach Parise ever hurting the Islanders on the ice, but the Islanders not picking him that draft definitely hurt the Islanders on the ice. So that's probably why it is. It's like, we probably just didn't want to think about it when Parise, he might have lit it up against the Islanders in his Devil career. And we probably just, because it hurts so bad, we're just like, I'm just going to blank that out. I don't need to see him going roof over Jan Denis, and thinking about, oh, well, he should be an Islander. He should have been an Islander this whole time. Even Pierre Maguire knows that. And also want to say one thing real quick about that Pierre Quick clip is that, everybody rags on Pierre and he deserves a lot of it. But what that clip does show is he hasn't changed a lick. Like,
no,
he has been, so many people get so frustrated with him now. And I'm like, he's been doing this for so long that you need to realize that that's just who he is. Like it wasn't like he was going to change at any point. So if you listen to him in 2003, talking about Zach Parise playing for whoever at Shattuck St. Mary's, he still said that about Zach Parise when the Wild were on NBCSN. So it's like I know a lot of people found hockey like a little bit later than that. So, and maybe like listening to Pierre the first time was a harrowing experience, but if you go back into his archives, which the Parise draft was definitely one of his, Sports Center top tens, probably number one, at least when it comes to the Islanders. You go back and listen, like, all right, well, you can at least appreciate that he has not abandoned his shtick at any point.
I agree. And with that, we'll start the podcast. We'll come back with the second half of the podcast. But first, our sponsor, VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, and mugs featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. They also have our Al Arbor t-shirts, and you can get a 15% discount by using the code LIGHTHOUSE15. So go to VintageIceHockey.com today. VintageIceHockey.com. We are Vintage Ice Hockey. With Zach Parise in tow, what does this mean for the Islanders in the Metropolitan Division? You can make the case that the team that got better, the most over the course of the offseason were the New Jersey Devils. I mean, they picked up Doug Hamilton. They picked up who else? Well, there was another guy they got.
Thomas Tatar.
Yeah.
Ryan Graves.
Yeah, Ryan Graves. And they picked up the goalie. Jonathan Bernier. Okay, so, you know, Hamilton obviously is very, very good. You know, Tatar is pretty good. Ryan Graves is pretty good too. And then, you know, Bernier is kind of obviously in the twilight of his career. But, you know, I mean, for the Devils, that's pretty good. And, you know, they already had an okay kind of core there a little bit. So they're the guys who I think you can clearly say got better. But, you know, when you're coming from as far as the Devils have, what does that mean? Does that mean that they're going to be a playoff team? I don't even know. As far as the teams at the top of the division or have been at the top of the division over the last couple of years, I mean, did any of them really improve all that much? I don't, you know, I'm not trying to jinx the Islanders here, but I'm not 100% sure. I mean, I don't think the Caps did anything, right? And the Penguins just lost a bunch of guys. So I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the margin for error for those two teams, the Penguins and Capitals, is definitely as thin as it's been since, you know, Crosby and Malkin and Ovechkin found their prime, I guess. Like, and you think from basically what, 2007 to 2018, 19, maybe even last year, because the Penguins ended up winning the division and the Capitals, I think, finished second or third or whatever with the weird East Division. It's been pretty clear, like, those two are the top teams, and at least that's how the perception was for the whole hockey world. And it would, and obviously the early part of the last decade, the first, you know, 6 years of last 7 years of last decade, the Rangers too, like, they were good, and the Flyers would be up there. The Metro Division, completely different now. This is probably a new era for this division, and actually funny that we're doing this 31 thoughts thing today, because at the end of last season, at the end of the, I remember listening to an episode, and they were talking about how the Metro, Jeff Marek was like, yeah, the Metro is going to be a bear next year. That's going to be the toughest division. And I was just like, this guy, he's, what year does he think it is? Because it's, if you look next door to the Atlantic Division with the Lightning, Panthers, Leafs, Bruins, and the team that just lost to this in the Stanley Cup final is the fifth best team. That's the division that is the group of death. Like, the Metro is as soft as it's been for, since at least this podcast has been around, and the odds show it. Like, the Islanders are the favorite right now, but they're all, there's no team at DraftKings right now better than plus 275. So, like, there's no clear favorite, and the rest, every team is kind of like bunched in the middle behind them. So it's like this division's there for the taking, and the Islanders are going to come in for probably the first time in my life. There are going to be people in the hockey world, hockey pundits, hockey insiders, that are going to pick the Islanders to win the Stanley Cup. Like, be ready for that. There's going to be people that will pick the Islanders at TSN, at ESPN. It's going to be weird, and it actually might not sit well with us, but it's not a bad shout. And just because this division, like, they're better than the Penguins and the Capitals, I think, objectively right now. The odds show it. The Hurricanes are solid, but who knows about their goaltending? I mean, the Rangers, God, like, yeah, there's a ton of good things to like there, but there's also a lot of weird stuff at the bottom of the roster. And yes, the Devils were the team that improved the most on paper, but their improvement is still, like, it got them to fringe contender, playoff contender level. Like, it's hard to imagine the Devils beating out the Islanders, Hurricanes, Rangers, Penguins, and Capitals this year, and maybe they do, but, like, even so, like, that, as we've seen with this Islander team, like, you have to learn to win and pace yourselves and in the playoffs, etc. And, like, so, yeah, the Devils might be a lot of insiders are going to say they're my dark horse team this year. Like, yeah, of course they are, because they had a great offseason. That's what ends up happening, is they just all pick the team that had a splashy offseason. And yeah. And, but I don't think they're good enough to really be worried about, like, running away or taking a spot away from the Islanders yet, you know, knock on wood. But, the division just looks so different from what we're used to. And it's the Islanders have always been a prove people wrong kind of thing, and now they got to prove them right. Like it's which is going to be a different kind of cloak to wear. And I really am interested to see what, like, I'm for some reason I always live in like a little bit of fear that like another shoe is always going to drop with the Penguins or Capitals. Yeah. Like the day before, first of all, Sidney Crosby's out for 6 weeks out of nowhere.
Minimum
like,
6 weeks.
So yeah, minimum 6 weeks. Right. So, and you know, Malkin's
right.
probably going to miss some time. So the Penguins could be a mess. Like they still have Tristan Jarry and Casey DeSmith, right? As their goaltending. Like this is,
but they always have that late season run in them. That's a thing.
Yeah. There's always like that's what I'm saying. Like there's a shoe right. that's going to drop at some point with the Penguins. Like they're going to get like, I don't know, some like Jamie Benn or Tyler Seguin is just going to end up on the Penguins right. at like the last hour of the offseason this year. And it's going to be like, you know, shit, like that sucks. But right now, like, as we said last episode, like the Islanders, not only is the roster, the culture, the coaching staff and the front office personnel reason for optimism, but like the stuff around the team, and obviously the new building, but like the environment they're going to be playing in, there's no reason to be pessimistic either. They're not playing in the Atlantic. Like the East Division last year was a mess. Like it was so hard with the teams that were in it. And this year it's like, this division shouldn't be as harrowing, which is like just another reason to be cautiously optimistic. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like, again, people see Washington and Pittsburgh and automatically assume that they're contenders. And I mean, with respect, I think those teams both have an uphill climb. Would it surprise me to see them, be very good and make it throughout, far in the playoffs? No, frankly, it wouldn't. But I mean, I think if you look at the rosters, you'll see that, they're not quite what they were. I mean, the Caps still need to find which one of their goalies is a starter. Like that's kind of a problem. They also lost, one of their top four defensemen and their guys aren't getting any younger. The Penguins, like you said, they're going to have injury problems. They might, what if they keep having goalie problems? I'm not even sure who they even added this year. Like, it's just not that big a deal. We haven't mentioned the Flyers at all, and it's been a very Flyers-y offseason in that they made good acquisitions of like Ryan Ellis. Like that's a big deal, but they also acquired Rasmus Ristolainen, who statistically has been one of the worst defensemen in the league for his entire career. They also picked up Martin Jones, who statistically has been one of the worst goalies in hockey for like about 5 years now. So it's just a weird, does that make them better? Does that make them worse? I don't know. I mean, I feel like, Carter Hart will be better, but with Rasmus Ristolainen playing every game in the top four, like I don't know what they see in him that, will change. If maybe he changes his entire career around in Philly, who knows? But I mean, I don't know. It doesn't really happen that way in the Flyers world. Maybe things different, and then obviously you got Ellis there too, so I don't know. It's just a weird team. The Rangers I think will be a little bit better, but they're still kind of a work in progress. I think some of the things that work, that are there that work really well, obviously Panarin, Fox and a bunch of other guys, but I think the bloom has come off a lot of their other pieces too, that maybe they're not as good. Lafreniere and Kako have not quite taking the world by storm as early as people thought. Doesn't mean they're bad players, but it's taking a little bit of time. I don't think Jacob Trouba is what they thought he was going to be. So there's a lot going on there. The Devils we talked about, the Blue Jackets have obviously lost a lot. They got a new coach now, so who knows what they're going to be like. And then, with the Hurricanes, it's funny to me that everybody, the internet loves the Hurricanes. There's only two teams you're allowed to talk about on hockey Twitter, and that's the Hurricanes and Leafs. Everybody else is trash. So you can only talk about the Hurricanes and talk about how great they are and how wonderful and amazing and, iconoclastic these guys are. But then, like, their goalie now is going to be Freddie Anderson. Like, what? Okay. Like, didn't this guy just get run out of Toronto, essentially? Like, they traded their starting goalie in the playoffs to Detroit. Why? Because they didn't want to pay him for whatever reason. They went out and signed Freddie Anderson. Like, is Freddie Anderson a terrible goalie? No. But, like, this is the guy you've entrusted to take you to the Stanley Cup? Like, I don't know. There's nothing in his resume that proves that he can do this. We've seen this time and again. Ad nauseum in the number one possible stage you can possibly see it. Maybe things are different in Carolina than they were in Toronto. But, I mean, are they very good? Sure. They got Jesperi Kotkaniemi now, who signed the offer sheet. The Habs didn't match. He's gone there now. But, like, they already had a team that could score. I don't know what they needed Kotkaniemi for. And so I see a very good team that I don't know. I don't see a cup contender from them. A very good team. Again, don't get me wrong, and I could be totally wrong. But, like, I don't know. To me, I see a team that's kind of all offense and not a ton of D and goaltending, which, you know, again, there's a team in blue and white that plays, you know, 1,000 or so miles north of Raleigh, North Carolina, that you could say the same thing about. So, and maybe that's why the internet loves them, because they're also the Leafs, basically.
Yeah, and the, you know, going to back to that 31 Thoughts episode last week when they were like, oh, Eric, this just screams Eric Tulsky, doesn't it? Like, you know, this guy is just the genius of all geniuses when it comes to hockey, because he was like the first analytics guy who had a Twitter account or something. And
he was a blogger. He wrote for Broad Street Hockey. He was a Flyers blogger.
and nobody, you know, the moves that you just, the head scratchers, of course, had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
The fact that they traded their best goalie for no reason and then signed
Tony D'Angelo. Last scene on the ice got completely walked and embarrassed and pantsed by Matt Barzal. Yeah. Those moves were somebody else's moves. The Kotkaniemi thing is totally Tulsky, but everybody else, you know, that's some gremlin on the wing of the plane that, you know, decided.
Yeah. That was that's a Lamoriello influence. You could,
I love that.
It just is so funny how it's the hockey. It really is mimics and mirrors the worst parts of Twitter at large, I guess, and on all sides of every coin.
But, I say this as a person doesn't really understand a lot of the world around me. The funniest thing about hockey Twitter is that people spend all day, every day talking about the sport that they clearly don't understand anything about. Like, they just don't understand how it works. Why did they sign this guy? How could they do this? What did they do? Well, like, I don't know. Maybe there's something there that maybe you don't know. I don't know, but that's just my take.
Because, you know, the team doesn't have enough penalty killers and he's good at killing a penalty and, then there's also, Tony D'Angelo signed with the Hurricanes. Like, I can't believe this sport treats me this way. Like, it's not about you. It sucks for that's a shitty move, but it's, you know, wasn't a personal affront to you, hockey Twitter person. It's somebody was going to sign this guy. I mean, look what the Canadians did at the draft. The moral compass is not terribly north in professional sports. So, or amateur sports, but, it's like, that's the thing there was a time when I hated the Hurricanes because the Islanders just could never seem to beat them. They always seem to lose big games against them, like in the Peter Laviolette Islander and then Peter Laviolette Hurricane era. Like, Artur Zerbe would just stand on his head, and then the only team that Cam Ward would ever play well against was the Islanders. And I never really liked them ever. The advent and jumping the shark of hockey Twitter's made me hate them even more. But they're good. They're definitely, I think if you were to ask me right now, I think that the Hurricanes probably provide the stiffest competition to the Islanders in the division. There is actually, they have a pretty low floor in terms of, you know, goaltending. Like, Antti Raanta could be great, but he also doesn't ever play because he gets hurt. And like you said, Freddie Anderson is, hopefully he brings like a ton of, you know, sport therapists with him down to Carolina for the way that they treated him at Toronto. Like, he's got a lot of, you know, things to kind of fight through as a human being, I'm sure, because that just kind of wasn't fair that he became the reason the Leafs didn't advance past the first round of the playoffs and ever. It wasn't that Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews didn't score. It was the goaltending 2 years ago. And then this year it was both. And, but I think, you know, the point is, like, the Islanders seem to be of all, like, you can go through every team. You think about, the Capitals with, their goaltending plus their defense, the bottom of their roster. I mean, their number one center, Evgeny Kuznetsov, was like running away from the law. It seemed like at the end of last year, like, there was something going on with him. And like we talked about the Penguins, like there's the Islanders feel safe, you know, and that's horrifying. It's really, really scary that they feel so safe. But even like you just, even if you like follow the players this summer on like social media and stuff, like they all seem to like be doing like the same thing and like hanging out with each other and stuff. It's going to feel, I think, like a continuation of last year, a little bit. And just like last year kind of felt like a continuation of the bubble. And I think if you ask teams that have had, sustained success going to like the Penguins and the, or the Kings or the Blackhawks, I wonder, I'm sure those fan bases say the same thing about those years. Like, oh yeah, it kind of just felt like every season was just, you know, a continuation of the last one. It didn't feel like so herky jerky, because for most of my life, it did. Like after an Islander season ended, the off season, whatever would happen, but it would feel like, you know, a complete, you being pulled in 100 different directions. And, you didn't know if they were going to be playing at Nassau Coliseum or if they were going to be playing.
It was always like two or three whatever. Guys and, that left and two or three new guys.
Right.
And,
yeah. It just feels like the way they play, it's almost like they just keep coming forward, dump the puck in, they get it, blah, blah, blah. Like it's nice. It's fun to watch, the rest of the like other dumpster fires, you know, be set ablaze the rest around the league and being like, oh, the Islanders used to be that. And now we're sitting over here, like that picture of Billy Smith, like where he's like lounging back in the lounge chair and sipping something. Like that's how it feels like the off season. Now you're just sitting there waiting for the Islanders to start because there's nothing too much, to like really worry about. Right.
I mean, the biggest worry I think for the Islanders is that 13 game road trip that they're going to have to go on to start the season because of UBS Arena. Like that, you know, that's going to be a problem. But you know, they talked about it with Parisi, and he was like, "Hey, we did 9 when we opened the Prudential Center in Jersey." So you know, it is.
And I feel like Barry Trotz probably is relishing in that opportunity because he loves preparing like and coming up with like a life plan for a situation like that. And if you are looking I shouldn't mention this on the top. If you are looking to bet the Islanders because you're a fan or whatever, I would wait for that road trip to end because like they, you know, if they do struggle a little bit, the number could drift and everyone will be like, oh, what's wrong with the Islanders, without realizing like they just played a 13 game road trip. They only have 28 more road games left this season and 41 home games. Right. I think that's a good point. Like that is a little scary. But that's an on ice, like that's an on ice thing. Like that's an actual season problem. Whereas for the first time in a very long time, like there's been no big off ice problem that we have to deal with. Like even last offseason, you think about the Devontaeves trade. Right. Like there's been all these kind of downers, and we haven't really been served with one yet.
Yeah, for sure. The off season, if you follow any of the Islanders on Instagram or whatever, that they're hanging out at the US Open, they're playing golf out at the on the island. They're having a good time. Like it's a pretty tight team as always. So I think they're relishing the consistency and the fact that, you know, they're bringing back the same team, which, you know, when you really think about it, yeah, I feel like one of these days we're going to sit back and be like, boy, that was a really crazy time. Like just to talk about herky jerky, like just getting games in has been hurt. You know, you got we had the pandemic shutdown, then the bubble, then the half season, and now it's a full season. And obviously for the Islanders, it's a little more herk and jerk because of their new arena situation. So I think having that consistency is a big deal. And I'm with you. I think Trotz and Lou Lamoriello, for that matter, too, are like, they're prepared. Like, you know, they're not going to walk into this thing and be like, well, we'll just see how it goes. Like they know about this. Obviously Lamoriello was probably there when the schedule was even made. And Trotz, for sure, he's talked about how he likes starting on the road because it gives the guys a chance to really bond early. And so I feel like, yeah, he's got more planned for that 13 game road trip than, you know, bringing a pack of Uno cards and, you know, a board game or two. Like he's ready for it. And I think he's going to have some fun with these guys. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, you know, this is a year more than any other. This division is set up for the Islanders. Not that, you know, I think they're going to run away with it, but I mean, they're going to be pretty competitive. Like it's not going to, you know, I don't think they're going to find themselves in too deep a hole too quickly. And we'll see what happens. Now, of course, these are famous last words. We'll see what happens. I feel like we do this all the time, but those teams, like you said, they got something up their sleeve. I'm sure the Caps and Penguins for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. like when I'll never forget when the Penguins traded for Derek Brassard, and we were just like, oh crap, like he's gonna be amazing. And then you know, even like the Capitals last year,
actually,
like,
he's a Flyer now too, isn't he?
Brassard, yeah, Derek Brassard. Is that the Vigneault, and Elaine Vigneault is getting those Rangers back together with Yandel. Oh, yeah.
Forgot about
Kevin Hayes, Brassard. Yeah, yeah, but that, like, I mean, it's last year the Flyers were the division favorite for some reason, and I was very much against that, and I kept saying like this team is completely overrated. This year they're just completely flying under the radar, which is a really strange place for the Flyers to be. Because usually they're not, like, they're doing one thing or the other. But yeah, I'm not terribly worried about them yet. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see. Like, the thing about that 13 game road trip, I guess, that is the most worrying is that it doesn't make sense in terms of like their actual travel. If you look at it, like, it's, I think it starts in Carolina, then it's in, then they're Florida, which may, you know, okay, that's easy. And then all of a sudden, like, Nashville, Arizona, Vegas, 5 days off somewhere else. Then they're playing like Winnipeg down. Then they travel down. Like, so it is, that's the weird thing. It's like, they're touching all these, you know, it is a lot of, obviously a lot of travel, but we all expected it to be a, you know, they'll play the Devils and they'll go play the Rangers and they'll play the Hurricanes, go down the East and maybe the South and come back. But, so that may, you know, that could catch up with them. But, that is, like we were saying, like Barry Trotz did such a good job getting them ready for the bubble conditions. They got them ready really well to come out of the gates hot after for the shortened season with a shortened training camp, et cetera. And I'm sure that he will have them ready, at least prepared to come out of the gates hot for this weird road trip. So it's, I wouldn't be surprised if like they do come out and they are that all of a sudden you see them all walking with guitars again onto the plane, getting ready for their month vacation to start the year.
I don't know if it's a vacation, but we'll see what happens when that goes in. And if you haven't been watching the UBS Arena live stream, you're missing out. They got most of the seats are in now. There's still a few. They got some big piece of plastic up right now on the inside, which makes it kind of hard to see what's going on, but you can see some of the suites they're working on. You can see sort of like countertops go in there. They got some guardrails for the little steps going in there. The scoreboard is done. The light dot matrix boards are on the sides. Are all done. They all get lit up. It's really kind of cool looking. And then the outside, they're laying down concrete. They got some shrubbery out there. And then obviously the big thing that they posted on social media about this, the top has been painted with the UBS logo, and it looks all really cool. And it's very exciting. I gotta tell you, it's extremely exciting. I don't know if I'm going to have the money to go see a game there this year, but it's still pretty exciting. So
The prices, I guess, on the secondary market seem to be out of control already, which is interesting. I didn't, and I do think it's funny that they keep saying, depending on what they're promoting, it's on the Queens Nassau border, but where the Islanders are, they're talking about the Islanders are like Long Island's new beautiful arena. But it's a man, it's exciting. Yeah. I just remember that I can feel the way I can remember how exactly I felt when the Islanders were about to start playing at Barclays Center, and the feeling I had when I actually walked in there for the first time, just being like, oh shit, like this is not going to work out. And me and you, we tried our best to be as positive about it as possible because we didn't think obviously that the Coliseum was ever coming back, and that we were dead wrong. Just the difference in looking forward to that and this is just so different. Yeah. It should be glossed over.
I mean, I think a lot of people were dead wrong about that, but I think a lot of people were positive, try to be positive about it. Like, again, I've never been shy about saying, as a person that does not live on Long Island, having a 25-minute subway ride to the games was the best thing ever. Like, it really was. And you know, their UBS Arena is going to take that away from me. So I'm kind of getting screwed in this deal, but again, it's not about me. Like, it's about what's best for the team. They're finally going to have a place where they own it. They make money coming in there. So like, there's a reason those tickets are expensive. There's a reason that the hot dogs and the pretzels and the food are going to be way the hell more expensive, because that more of that money is going to go to the Islanders, which is something they have not enjoyed until this time for 50 years of this team's existence. So it's kind of a big deal, but I'm not, We're wrong about everything. Like we don't know what we're talking about. Like that's the beauty of this podcast. We have no idea what we're talking about, but we have fun anyway. So it's okay. It's okay. You know, we have a good time. And then we're like, yeah, you know what? That didn't work out that way, but that's all right. It worked out better. Or yeah, we didn't see this coming. So, should make you very positive about all of our Zach Parise talk. Anyway, before we wrap it up, I just want a couple of quick shout outs. So last episode we talked about the Broadway show. We heard from a few fans of both the Islanders and Broadway. That's great. I'm sorry, I can't find the tweet right now, and I don't want to get anybody's names wrong, but thank you very much for reaching out to us. I forgot to mention Randy Marshall, by the way, who's a longtime Islanders, you know, Newsday writer, loves the Islanders, right? Wrote a lot about the arena stuff and is also a huge Broadway fan. I don't know why she slipped my mind there, but sorry about that, Randy. I don't know if you listen to us, but there is that cross section there. But I did hear from a longtime reader of Lighthouse Hockey and a listener to the show named Michael Paul Smith. You may remember a while back, we posted a video at Lighthouse Hockey, sort of a fake press conference, like a roommate press conference. That was Michael and his wife, Jillian. They're Islanders fans. They're Islanders season ticket holders. Michael is an actor, and he has a podcast with his friend called Ted and Michael Read Sketches into Microphones that you should check out. It's really funny. They do a lot of cool sketches there. But Jillian has not one, but two super successful podcasts. One of them is actually about Broadway. It's called The Hamilcast. And it's one of, if not the most successful Broadway podcasts out there. It's the official podcast of Hamilton the Musical. And she's interviewed the actors in the show and Lin-Manuel and all those guys. And so she also has another podcast called True Crime Obsessed, which if you're a true crime podcast fan, you should check out as well. I mean, they're run by Islanders fans. So what else do you need to know? Me saying check out these two podcasts is sort of like a flea saying, you know, while you're here, you should check out the dog too. Like, you know, it's sort of like our audience is like one billionth of their audiences, but it was very cool to hear from Michael. He's a cool guy, and wish him and Jillian the best of luck in all their projects. So there you go.
And we should, Jeff, before you sign off, I do want to say one thing that we need to say is our congratulations to our old friend, Stan Fischler. For being named to the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame.
U.S. Hockey Hall of Famer. Stan Fischler now is his official title. Should be Hockey Hall of Famer, but we'll start with the U.S. Yeah. Hockey Hall of Fame.
Now,
yes, yeah. 100%. Million times deserved. Again, we root for people here, not teams. So we all root for Stan, obviously, a mentor to both of us. But no, that is very, very cool. And I emailed him the other day. He hasn't given back to me, but I was like, I can't wait to hear your speech because that's going to be an all-timer. I can't even imagine.
Yep.
How many people in the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame do you think watched the New York Rovers play at Madison Square Garden? Not a lot. I can't imagine, right?
I can't imagine either. No, I'm saying, how many people in the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame even knew that the New York Rovers were a thing? You know, right. I bet you Stan, when he does give a speech, we'll open it with a big band song.
Right. Oh, yeah.
You know, like I'll never forget when he sat down next to Evgeny Nabokov at the Islanders. They won a very big game in 2013, and Nabokov was great. He sat down next to him, and he said, "You know what today's song is?" And Nabokov said, "No, but I know you're going to tell me." And they started laughing. He said, "Happy days are here again," and then they started singing it. I'll never ever forget.
Stan has been in hockey for like 60 years or whatever it is. He's written literally 100 books. He's done TV, radio, everything you could possibly do in hockey without, and he played too, as a youth and against other media guys. But you know what? If he had only done those interviews with Nabokov, I still say you should put him in the Hall of Fame. Like those right there were gold, and they should put out a compilation or something with those.
I know, gotta get it.
But there you go. Cool. Yes, definitely. Great idea. You should say that. Where can everybody find you on Twitter?
Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at the Big Lebowski with two E's on Twitter. Read his work at Action Network. I'm sure things are ramping up right there. It's first NFL Sunday today. Yeah. Getting into the baseball playoffs. Hockey's around the corner. NBA around the corner. Yeah, I can tell you're very excited for the NFL. As always. as am I. The Jets are starting right now, and I could care less. So there you
go. It's the same thing over and over again, the NFL. Like, it's just like this team is going to not kick a field, or they're going to kick a field goal when they shouldn't have. And the ref's going to miss a call, and that's going to decide who goes to the Super Bowl. there's a spoiler.
Instead of watching any NFL game, I highly recommend going to YouTube and finding Secret Base, which is the video component of SB Nation, and watching the 7-part history of the Atlanta Falcons. That will be 100 times more entertaining than any football game you can watch this year. It's like 7 hours long because every episode is like 45 minutes. But trust me, it's worth it. And I mean, the Falcons are, as they say in the thing, basically the most ridiculous NFL team ever, because it's not that they just haven't had any impact on society whatsoever. It's that they always come close to actually doing something and then they just don't. So you should definitely check it out. It's awesome. They also had a history of the Seattle Mariners. The history of the Atlanta Falcons is totally worth it. I've watched them every single day. I watched an episode and it's fantastic. Okay. And read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion as well. Okay. Taking us out is an artist from Minneapolis, Minnesota. His latest release, Welcome to America, came out in July. It is a posthumous record made up of previously unreleased studio material, and it is fantastic. This is Prince with Yes on the 31 Thoughts About Zach Parise podcast. And that's it.